With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Dream Job Ready. My name is Dane Sharp, I'm your host, and my guest for this episode is Carolyn Breeze, General Manager of Go Cardless, an exciting fintech company that is helping digitise commerce and payments. I met Carolyn in 2015 when I worked with eBay for a year. Carolyn spent over 4.5 years at eBay, first as an enterprise sales manager and then in her final year as head of SMB acquisition and channel partnerships. The SMB stands for small and medium-sized businesses. My role was retail partnerships marketing manager, and she was one of the many eBay staff members I had to interview with when I was applying for the role. I can't remember exactly where the interview sat in the whole process, but I remember she made an impression on me straight away, even before I later found out that we grew up in the same area of Australia and both completed our uni degrees at University of Wollongong. We all know interviewing for a role can often be difficult and unnerving, so I really appreciated Carolyn's honesty, authenticity, and directness during the time that I had with her. I was being hired to help eBay acquire and engage big retail businesses that weren't yet selling on the platform. It was a dream job, and it would eventually get me working with companies such as Target, Samsung, Disney, and Woolworths. She didn't sweat me in the interview, but she really made sure I knew my stuff and could bring some value to the business and her team straight away. But she also shared some truths from eBay's side, and she never sugarcoated the situation I was walking into. At that point, eBay was still seen as a secondhand goods marketplace in many ways and was having some troubles changing the perceptions of many big and traditional retail companies. And she was really open about talking about that, which was super helpful for me going through the application. She keeps it very honest in this episode too, sharing a list of really good advice and suggestions to help you get ready for your next dream job opportunity. Her career got started in telco, where she worked for Crazy John's and then Vodafone. We talk a lot about her experiences in the industry and what she learned in those first couple of roles, and you're going to be blown away by the story she tells about how she got her first job with Crazy John's while she was still at uni. It's got to be one in a million. Today, Carolyn's fast becoming one of Australia's most celebrated business leaders and one of the world's leading women in tech advocates. Accolade-wise, she earned a CEO Magazine's IT and Telecommunications Executive of the Year Award in 2018 while she was working with Braintree. She's been recognised as one of Business Insider's top 20 women in fintech and recently received the prestigious Advocate for Women Award at the 2019 Women in Payments Symposium. She also happens to be a cancer survivor, a mother of two, and one heck of a great human being. You're going to get a lot of value out of this interview. So, with that said, let's get this episode started. This is Dream Job Ready with Carolyn Breeze.
Please note that the opinions of guests are their own and not those of the companies they have worked for.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. So for Go Cardless, I run Australia and New Zealand, so I'm effectively a country manager or a general manager, and so that means I manage the growth of that brand in this market. So they're a payments organisation, so that's everything from sales through to marketing and the technical side of it as well.
Perfect. And fintech, obviously one of the most booming industries there is now. You've almost become a voice for women in tech and women in digital payments in recent years. How did that come about?
I think my timing was pretty great to become a leader in tech. So through my years at eBay and PayPal and so on, I was one of the only female leaders that I knew. So one side, it kind of just was timing and came naturally. But on the other side, I learned that I really enjoy working for companies that drive inclusion and diversity in their communities through tech. and providing choice for people. So, you know, eBay as an example drove inclusion and diversity by making it possible for people of any shape and size to sell online, and companies that democratize payments as well for small to medium businesses and large enterprise is what really kind of gets me going.
Awesome. Now, you've mentioned eBay. We worked together at eBay for a year while I was there. You were there for a couple of years. You've also had dream jobs for Vodafone, Crazy John's in its heyday. And that's what I'd love to chat with you today is you know, the journey that you've been on in your career, the ups, the downs, you know, the wins, the successes, any hard times you've come across. Let's throw it back a little bit if we can, not too far, of course, but you know, how did your career get started? Where was your first job? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So throughout the later years of high school and in my late teens, early 20s, I worked in mobile phones, selling phones casually. For anyone who understands mobile phones today, people who sold them back then actually made money. Yeah. It was actually, you know, on emerging tech as opposed to what it is now. And so I would do that casually, and I kind of immersed myself in that industry, selling back. Most people won't remember this, but when OneTel and the likes were around. And so I did that while I was at uni. So I did uni at night and completed uni that way. And that was what I knew. I knew sales. I started working to make money. I didn't go to uni full time out of school. I wanted to make money. Yeah. And then as one of my major assignments at uni in marketing, I was asked to build a kind of go-to-market plan, for lack of a better term. Back then we didn't really use go-to-market, but go-to-market plan for an existing Australian iconic brand. And I chose Crazy John's, who back then was one of Australia's largest mobile phone retailers, kind of back in the Strathfield car radios kind of day. And Crazy John's were based in Melbourne. They were a Telstra dealer channel who had a really large retail store footprint for consumers, and they had a very small corporate arm. And growing up in Wollongong and going to uni in Wollongong, I built a business plan for them to actually create a regional corporate mobile phone arm and franchise it that was kind of similar to or replicated the Telstra Countrywide model, which had just recently been released at that time. Mm-hmm. And the Crazy John's business model fed a lot off the Telstra model, being that Telstra was the network. And I liked the idea so much and I liked the industry so much that when I graduated, I took the business plan to John Ilhan, who was the founder and CEO of Crazy John's. And that's a pretty interesting story for a girl from the Gong, because he didn't want to see me.
I'm sure. How do you get an opportunity to get a seat at his table? At that time, it's one of the biggest, most interesting companies going around in Australia.
Yeah, so I couldn't. I flew down to Melbourne four times, literally stalking him, and sat in his office asking for appointments, trying to meet the head of sales, you know, sales for Victoria, sales for New South Wales, HR, whoever would see me. And back then, this, mind you, I'm carrying around like a paper-bound folder of my business plan, you know, or would have either been that or a disc, but anyway. And he just wouldn't see me. He was always unavailable. No one was available to talk to me. And then I saved up again to fly down. Wow. And I got to Melbourne Airport and I was waiting for a taxi. And a limo pulled up and said, are you heading into town? I said, yes, South Melbourne. And the driver said, John was the driver's name, he said, if you, I'll give you the same fare as a taxi to get you back in because I've just dropped somebody off. So I jumped in the front seat and spoke a little bit about what I was doing in Melbourne, and he said, I'm John's driver. I've just dropped him and Brendan Fleischer to the airport. And I was really upset, one, because I'd missed them again. But I asked if he would pass the folder on, and he said, oh, we don't talk shop in the car. And I said, just leave it in the back of the car, and if he gets it and I get a call, I'll shout you and your wife to Flower Drum. That's how long ago this was. Wow. That was the best restaurant in Wollongong, in Melbourne at the time. And within a week, John had called me, and within a week of that, I was hired.
Wow, that is ridiculous. So basically you've got a school project sitting in the back of a limo that you've by chance jumped into purely out of the generosity of the driver at the time.
Yes.
It happened to be the same limo as the guy you were chasing in Melbourne. Yes. Very brashly, I'd imagine, as a young 20-year-old anyway, to try and expect to get counsel of someone like that leading a company like that.
Yeah.
That is crazy. What did you must have thought that the odds of that happening, one in a billion, wouldn't they?
I honestly was that naive that I thought if I went there, he would talk to me.
Right.
But I think it was good practice for me to see how hard it is to get in front of a stakeholder like that. But I was also really confident in the plan I'd put together.
Yeah.
And in the fact that I had sold phones as well, and that I wanted to execute the plan, I wanted to be part of it as well, gave me more confidence. So I'm sure if he didn't take it, I would have tried to take it to somebody else, but it was made for him.
Gotcha. So my brain vision's going crazy. So when you, I guess, spoke to him next when he engaged, was he sitting there with your school folder in front of it going, this is the greatest plan I've read? Or was it the hustle and bustle that you'd shown just to get into his limo?
Yeah, it was the hustle and bustle. So they weren't interested in the plan.
Well,
they had no intention. 20s, yeah. They had no intention of ever franchising the model. And I, you know, didn't fully understand the complexity of their arrangement with Telstra and how it actually worked. But they did like the hustle and bustle. And it did... The ROI and the go-to-market plan did prove to them there's a market outside of Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah.
And so they took me on to explore that. And so they hooked up my house in Wollongong, my unit, and I sold out of there.
Wow.
And ended up working for him for close to 5 years.
Wow. That's a dream run. That's a dream opportunity, I'd imagine. I think even, at uni, you get tasked to do things like that. You get, projects and assignments. And I think people take to them differently, right, depending on what you think the desired outcome. You must have really... A, put in the effort and the work into that project, but B, actually approach it with a mindset that this can matter to a business,
yeah,
whether it did
could,
or not.
And it could be mine.
Yeah.
And it could materially matter to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that stuck with me throughout my career is when I put together a business plan or a business case for the company that I'm working for, because I'm in that leadership role, I feel like it's my own.
Yep.
I feel like I'm a partner in that business. And so... I think that comes through in the work that I get put forward. Yes. Yeah.
Did you ever get to the opportunity to take John out to dinner?
I did get a voucher for him and his wife to go to dinner.
Oh, that's amazing.
I didn't let them down. That's where my first paycheck went.
Really? That's a beautiful story. That's crazy. And tell us about the 5 years you said at Crazy John's, because I'm old enough to remember the height that business had for a period. They were everywhere. They were doing... seemed like the most outlandish sponsorships. They were in the news the most. Seemed like they were going through incredible growth. Talk about, I suppose, your first proper job, I guess to some degree, and then being there at that time for that business.
Yeah, it was, mobiles was in like hyper growth. We'd just seen the transition from analog to digital. People were still carrying around two devices, like a BlackBerry and a phone. Mm-hmm. The iPhone, there was no such thing as an iPhone. I think my work phones were a Nokia and a BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
And the growth was astronomical, and particularly in the corporate space. But John, from a marketing perspective, John's brand, Crazy John's, had like a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
People were so loyal to him and the brand, and I think it comes from, where he built the brand from. So we're talking about a guy that... borrowed money to pay for his first handful of phones, or would, take money off someone for a phone, shut the shop door, drive across town and grab it and bring it back to fulfill the order, that kind of thing. So to go from that to having a team of, 300, 400 people, being Telstra's largest dealer in the country, and not long before I left, John was the first person to launch the Australian MVNO network, which means it's kind of an agnostic SIM card network that sits against a bunch of the other networks. So his vision, which unfortunately was never fully realised, was that you would be able to have a SIM card that would bounce between a Telstra and Optus and a Vodafone,
right,
always getting you the best rates as kind of you travel around here and the globe. Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and how much time did you get with him during those 5 years? Because obviously such an interesting connection to start, but once you were there.
John was very generous with his time. He was a very generous human generally. I remember he passed away in 2000 and I'm not even going to try and remember, 2006, October 2006. And John, it turns out, was just generous in every way.
Right.
Like I remember a story of someone saying that they had met an older couple, like a grandparents at the airport, and they had come up and thanked them for John's generosity, and they didn't know what they were talking about. And when they got down to it, he had met them on a plane like a couple of years before that. They had taken on the care of their two grandchildren because the parents had passed away, and they were saying to John, because they were Turkish, they were speaking Turkish, how they were worried they couldn't afford to keep the lifestyle the children were used to, and John had been paying for their bills.
Wow.
For a couple of years. So he was generous in every way. And so the exposure that gave me in that organisation was fantastic.
Yeah.
So being brought into meetings about expansion, being brought into strategic meetings about growth and kind of having a look at every different part of the business, it was really a good growth opportunity for me. So everything from logistics and kind of contract management, enterprise sales, and then just the general running of a business was pretty amazing.
For sure. It must have, it must have been a baptism of fire a little bit. You obviously were super hungry during that kind of retail selling university period to, even want to go out and kind of approach an opportunity like that and chase that down. Then you've got thrown in, I guess, that special connection with, the boss of that business has opened the door to additional opportunities. You must have, I'm assuming you obviously learnt plenty of things from a leadership point of view that you've carried on in, but then also, just been a sponge at that start to kind of learn different things on the go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other big learnings I got from Crazy John's was around sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So seeing a business build that rapidly off the back of a Telstra relationship, and then understanding when you hit kind of peak growth and all of your eggs in one basket, kind of how that can play out on an organisation. So I think I learned a lot about that. And then through when John passed away, Brendan Flatter stepped in as CEO, and we ended up being sold to Vodafone because we had made the transition from Telstra to the Vodafone network, and they purchased us and all the teams rolled in. And just, having those conversations where we sit around as a team and try to understand, okay, we've got to fold into a new part of the business now. How do we kind of structure ourselves amicably in a way where we can be absorbed easily and no one kind of loses out? And it was, it's a pretty young age to be having those kind of conversations where you're literally sitting around with your peers going, right, well, who's going to be the manager when we move in there, and who's going to do that role and that role, because we need to kind of fit the way they want us to fit, and not having that leader there anymore to kind of take you on the journey. So it was, it was huge growth.
And what age bracket was that, just so listeners understand?
I would have been 25. Yep. Right on the spot.
Yep. Yeah. And did that make you know exactly what you wanted to do from there on? Because you mentioned, your initial thought was, sell, make money, kind of, get into business and propel that way. Did that little period of your life open up, kind of further direction, or was it, hey, I'm learning on the job here and I'm going with the flow and working hard?
I think there are periods in your working career where that I feel like there's that ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. And one of those is being able to adapt really quickly to change and kind of grab stuff by the horns and run with it, and not really having time to sit back and strategically or even tactically sometimes think about how you're going to navigate your way through. And then there's other times where you can sit back when things are a slower pace and you feel more in control, really think about what you're doing, what you want to learn and where you want to go. This was the first scenario. It was literally just run. Yeah. So, you're in this office today in Parramatta, now you're in Chatswood in Vodafone, you've got a different target, you've got a different leader, it's a different organisation, and just kind of running with it and going. And I just kept relying on my sales skills and my people skills and my ability to be agile and change really quickly. And I think that was one thing I learned from Crazy John's as well, because we grew so rapidly, is that agility has really served me well. And I think it's one of the things that also made it easier for me to switch from like one industry to another and change into different roles and different verticals. Just being able to kind of harness the opportunity that's there and go, well, this is what I do know and this is what I don't know. I'm just going to like run and try and fill those gaps and make it work. And so, I wasn't learning at the time. I didn't think I was learning too much about myself. I think I was just keeping my head above water.
Yep.
But looking back in hindsight, I then moved into the Vodafone Global Enterprise team, which was a team within Vodafone Global that sat in Australia that looked after the top, 200 companies globally that Vodafone looked after. And that gave me a whole other set of experience. It was sales that got me in there, and it was my agility and my hunger to grow. But it gave me a whole different set of skills around leadership and commercial negotiation and, multi-country deals.
That's amazing. Was there any point that, working for those big brands became a motivator or an interest of yours? Or was it more the nuts and bolts of what you wanted to accomplish and then the opportunities that working for big companies like that actually engage? Because I know there's different ways people attack it. Some people say they want to go and work for company X, because they probably have amazing jobs, but it's also the brand and the size of the business. What was it for you at that point?
I think working for a large international brand has a lot of pros. So there's obviously an opportunity for growth from a career sense because it's such a large organisation. It's not like it's a small kind of family-grown business where there's some kind of cap. I think if you work for the right organisation as well, it gives you exposure into different departments within the organisation. So if you can work for one where they're able to give you a shot in marketing and then move you back to sales, and if you want to throw yourself into another part of the business and give that a go, you can. And so I've always kind of looked for organisations that have the ability to give you that kind of broader growth across as opposed to just up. And I think, you know, the brands have always been fun to work with. I've always been really fascinated by the influence a brand can have on a consumer.
Yep.
And, you know, the ability to lever different things or change different things within the brand and the effect they can have on the broader community of users or consumers that use them has always attracted me, yeah, to certain large companies. But in saying that, there's also a lot to be said for being able to work for smaller companies where you can move a lot quickly, quicker,
yes,
and get things done faster. And particularly in kind of sales and marketing, be actually sitting down talking to the person that makes the decision every time, I think is something, yeah.
Yeah, there's a beauty about it. And you don't realise it until you've had the opportunity to experience both. And certainly, as a 20-year-old starting your career, you don't have that knowledge or that experience to understand that, but it's definitely true. In those early days, what challenges were there? What stuff just made you think, well, this is not what I want to do tomorrow or today, etc.? Was there anything like that that came up?
I think there was the pace of it.
Yep.
Like I knew that the pace wasn't sustainable longer term. So I kind of got to a point in Vodafone Global where I was thinking that's when things started to slow down. I had the ability to look at what I'd learned and what I'd been doing and think, you know, I have been on this growth journey almost by default, you know, through acquisition and things like that and just adapting with change. But I haven't really been driving it myself. I've been reacting to it more than anything. And I had to make a decision, do I want to stay in telecommunications? Because back then, less so now, people could stay in industries, even organisations, for the whole of their career, or for 10 years or 15 years. And I was kind of at this inflection point where I thought, well, I can stay, I'm doing well at my job, I can move into more leadership roles and increase my bandwidth, but am I really growing? If I stay and at this age, so this is late 20s, early 30s, then I'm going to be in telco for the rest of my life.
Yep.
And is that really, you know, what I want to do? And that's probably the first time I've had a good think and thought strategically about the opportunity I was working in and where I was going to go.
It's such an interesting thing these days as well. I think it's something that you don't get a lot of advice necessarily about, and not a lot of people, I guess, talk to that. Certainly, you know, in our age group, I did 9 years at Rip Curl, and I would never take one day back. It was amazing, but it was the same thing. I looked at other opportunities and wanted to kind of branch out and experience different things. And I think it's the nature of work that's evolved over the last dozen years is a lot of people now are 1 or 2 years in a company. And even within that, are 1 or 2 roles.
I think back then as well, when you're doing a role for such a long time or you're in an organisation for such a long time, and that could be even 2, 3, 4 years, it's hard to think about the skills that you've got that are transferable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I actually take what I'm doing now and change to a completely different vertical? Like, I still have friends that I met in telco that work in telco today. And, you know, we'll catch up and they often say to me, but how did you, like, make the change? And, you know, it's only because I did it that I can look back and understand it now, but so much of what I was doing was transferable.
Yeah.
And it was just having the mindset that it was valuable outside of that industry or to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think exactly right. And, you know, I know the gap that you're about to talk to now is moving from Vodafone to eBay.
Yeah.
And, you know, bridging from that telecommunications business into what was at the time, you know, still quite a new, revolutionary digital commerce, digital payments, digital retail business. Everyone knows eBay now, but talk a bit about that because it's not an easy jump. It is a mindset thing. You've probably got some people, even if it's the voice in the back of your head telling you that you're not right for that role, or that you know, your experience doesn't add up to what other people's experience is going to be there. But I know that there were other people from telco there. So what made you, I guess, look at eBay, look at the role that you first had at eBay and make that leap?
Yeah, so I was fortunate that I was introduced to someone at eBay.
Yep.
Someone from Vodafone had actually moved to PayPal and they were one company at the time. And they'd heard about the role at eBay and introduced me. But I went hesitantly. Like I was like, oh, e-commerce, I don't know anything about e-commerce. I don't even think I'd really shopped online that much to date. So I was really nervous. I knew nothing. And eBay at the time were looking to create a sales function within their business. They were at a period where they were almost rebranding themselves from a secondhand marketplace into a place where you could find new product and brands that you knew that you could buy in store today. And so the purpose of that sales team, of which I was the first, was to go out and bring on those brands and that inventory to make the marketplace new. So they were looking at me as a seasoned salesperson who'd come from an international organization, so understood what that looked like, understood how to do commercial negotiation and build rapport and kind of run on my own belt. And I, once getting to know them, even though I knew nothing about e-commerce, everybody I met was so passionate about what they did and so intelligent in ways that I had never seen, because they had come from completely different backgrounds to me.
Yeah.
And had very different experiences to me. But again, not many of them had done sales roles like me.
Yeah.
And so I saw it as a huge opportunity for me to learn and to grow. And it was scary because I could have stayed at Vodafone and kept doing what I was doing. I was making good money and all that kind of stuff. But I wanted the opportunity to leave the industry because I knew I'd stay if I didn't. And I wanted to learn. And I looked at the vertical, as in e-commerce, as a huge growth opportunity.
Yeah.
And thought, well, if I'm not going to do it now, I'm never going to do it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we always talk about the benefit of hindsight, but, you know, foresight must be something that's congratulated every once in a while. Like I the same thing, and, you know, neither of us invented eBay. I wish one of us did, but, you know, identifying those trends, which they are to some people at the start, right? People, oh, it's just a trend, but, you know, differentiating a trend from, no, this is the future and this is where I need to be, even if it's for a short time, et cetera, is a skill in itself. Like, I think you've actually talked about a couple of different things there. Like, I do want to talk about the whole, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Just to stay on that really quick, how much has that come up in your career?
So much.
It has? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at the scenario with John, if I had just applied for a role on
still
paper,
be applying. Yeah.
I wouldn't have got it. And even looking at a role at the company on paper, I probably wouldn't have liked it. It's kind of like I built my own kind of role. Mm-hmm. And once they met me and vice versa, and again, it was that hustle, that's what created it. And all of the jobs that I've heard of since then, aside from the one I'm in now, regardless, have come from people I've worked with in telco or people I've worked with at eBay, who have met me, understand my work ethic, understand what drives me, and have said, hey, like, consider this opportunity, and then I've gone at it with that way. So it is interesting. It is about building the relationships and having a consistent work ethic and brand, and people really knowing who you are and knowing that you're dependable and you're agile and that you've got the ability to do that.
And you've got to have a crack, right? Like, it's all good meeting people or being introduced to someone, but you know, you can tell pretty quickly what people want to be there and
absolutely,
you know, who wants to put in.
It's that skill and will quadrant.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that skill and will quadrant?
No, but I like it.
So you've got skill and will, and you talk a lot about people's ability to do roles. Mm-hmm. Skill is something that can be taught. And yes, you can have highly skilled people, but you can have low skilled people as well that you can upskill and teach, and they're really engaged and stay engaged. Yeah. The one that really matters, the metric that's really important when I'm hiring people, is the will.
Mm-hmm.
So people having the will and the intent and the hunger, wanting to be there, wanting to learn. You know, I very rarely hire people with payments backgrounds.
Yeah.
In the two last roles that I've had, because I would rather find someone that's really hungry to learn and wants to understand.
Yeah.
And something I talk about a lot, particularly when I'm talking to younger women, because it's more prevalent, unfortunately, with younger women, is that, you know, we'll look at a job description, a very masculine job description, because they all are, and you know, there might be 12 things that we have to be able to do in order to meet the requirements for that role. And in the last two roles or three roles that I've had, I've probably met three or four of those requirements.
Yeah.
And the others I've seen as an opportunity for me to grow, because I know at the end of the tenure with this role, I'm going to have all of that.
Yeah.
So I see it as an opportunity for me to learn those things as opposed to me ticking all the boxes. And I think women in particular have a tendency to look at that and go, I'm not right for that role, and walk away. Whereas a lot more men in my experience would look at that and go, oh, I tick 8 of those 12, nailing it.
Yeah.
It's my job.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real delta in the way we look at opportunities. And, you know, when I've gone for roles where that's been the case and I've articulated that, I said, here's the things that I'm really good at. Here's the gaps that I have, but, you know, here's what I want to learn and those types of things. I've never been knocked back for an opportunity because I've been open about that.
Right. That's such an interesting thing. Like I'd you know, I think back, I was just thinking back to, you know, my own sort of job seeking times, and you are kind of trained or insisted not to go for something if you're not 10 out of 10 on the skills list. You know, some of the job sites literally say you've got 6 out of 10 skills, etc. Maybe it's a half full
LinkedIn
half.
LinkedIn even rank you that way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then obviously as some of the technology's advanced and, you know, the scraping of resumes and keyword searching and that. So I guess just to really, you know, talk about that, because I find that quite interesting. Mm-hmm. So you haven't ignored the ones that you don't meet on paper, but you've actually addressed them and gone, these are my learning opportunities, this is what I need to get better at. Gotcha. So you're hacking the software that's trying to get rid of you, but from a positive way.
But also asked more about understanding those KPIs. Because how often is it that we put out a job description and it's the same one we put out for the same role 12 months
ago? They're terrible, most of them these days.
Yeah, and if you were actually going to interview someone who had done that role for 6 months and go through that checklist, guaranteed there were things on there that they don't even do.
Yeah.
Like, we're just so programmed at kind of putting it out and ticking all the boxes and, you know, even... with my marketing degree, it's come up when I've applied for roles, because you kind of have to have gone to uni to apply for a role, so well done to everyone who's at uni. But no one's actually really ever leveraged that. And I remember I had this moment once that you'll find hilarious. I'll tell you who it was after.
Okay.
But being at eBay in a room, and we were strategizing, we were trying to solve a problem, and we were all talking, and I kept kind of coming up with suggestions, everybody did. And my boss, who'd been my boss for like 3 years, turned to me and went, what did you do at uni again? And I said, marketing. He goes, that old chestnut.
Playing that card.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's less about, I would see that paper as an opportunity for you to start a conversation, to really understand what's required, and know that in most cases, like me, when I hire, at the end of the day, I'm hiring for intent.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection, and someone to be hungry and really want the role.
Yep.
Things can be taught. You can learn things.
Yep.
And if you're really engaged and you want to learn and you want to grow, then you're going to stay in the business for a little while. So, yeah.
And for, you know, what's your advice for people that are, you know, seeking that next opportunity, chasing that dream job? You know, let's say they meet a lot of the requirements, they are hungry, you know, that will is there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they won't be able to find your limo every other day. What's the secret sauce to kind of getting in front of you, if it's that opportunity, or on the phone, whatever it is these days, and conveying, you know, their enthusiasm and their hunger to do a great job?
It's interesting. I find the recruitment industry and the hiring process really difficult, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I like to meet people, so I think it's fantastic that, you know, I get the opportunity to meet so many candidates that come through the door for Go Cardless and in previous roles. But I think if she was on the other foot now and I was going for a role and I'd seen a role come up, I would do whatever it would take to get in front of a decision maker within that business and talk to them about who I am and why the role and why that company more in particular. And... you know, go back to when you were at uni and everything was a bit scrappy and you'd be pulling an all-nighter to get that assignment in. Going for a job is no different.
Yeah.
If someone came to me with a well-thought-out plan, even if they weren't right, the fact that they'd gone to the effort and I could see how they worked and how their logic and how their brain worked around things, that to me is really important, and just really being hungry. Call the person, stalk them if you have to. I've been stalked for roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've hired many of my stalkers.
It's the clearest form of enthusiasm, right?
Yeah. You know, marketing's what I did at uni, so I'll talk back to that. But, you know, when you're sitting in a room pitching to a marketing client and they're going, what are you going to do to get me in the door? And you literally go, anything, tie balloons to it, hire a plane, do whatever, what's your budget? This is your career. This is your job. Like, do it. Go out and get it. Get the work that you want. You know, on the flip side, I've had interviews with people that on paper were overqualified, looked amazing for the job. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was like, shit, maybe they should be doing my job when they came through the door. But then if I asked them to, you know, talk to me passionately about why they wanted to work in fintech or why they wanted to work for a company like GoCardless, they weren't able to articulate that at all. Mm. You know, what type of manager do you want? What are you trying to, you know, develop skill-wise? How do you want to grow? That horrible question around where do you want to be in 5 years' time is just, I think, a ridiculous question that no one can ever answer. I prefer to ask what skills are you going to develop within the next 3 years that are going to keep you moving on your track? I think that's an easier, more palatable thing to kind of understand and to work towards. And for people who can't articulate that, they just don't have a place in my business.
Sure. Yeah, and it shows that they haven't. Potentially haven't even thought about it at that point, right?
Yeah, have some gusto.
Yeah, like, I've had people, you know, even when I was at McDonald's hiring different roles, and to your point, you know, great on paper, and I've asked them, you know, what they think about such and such in the restaurant. Mm. Oh, I haven't been into a restaurant for 2 years. I'm like, and you're going for the role right now. Like, there's over 1,000 restaurants around the country. It's not like you haven't had access. So, And let's talk about the jump to eBay. You know, we both worked there. You were there before me. It's such an amazing company, such a big brand. You know, gets accolades like you know, great place to work awards, etc., etc. Talk about the jump. You know, how much did it test you when you first went there? And I guess you know, how quickly and how much did you learn over the couple of years you were there?
It was a huge jump, and it was definitely sink or swim at eBay. So they threw everybody into the deep end and really, you know, pushed them along. And, you know, that was a function that was relatively new to eBay as well. There was no other kind of sales leaders within the organization or people that had done my role particularly before. There was a lot of ex-consultants at eBay, so everyone had kind of their own way of thinking about how it should be done. But the reality of getting it done, as you know, is another thing. And I had to learn a lot about the eBay ecosystem and marketplaces and e-commerce in general to be able to convince these retailers to be putting their inventory onto eBay. Back then, it was a really difficult platform to work with from an integration perspective. eBay have done a lot of work over the years to make that easier. But, you know, you're asking businesses to do something that you had to convince them to believe in, for one, that you would bring them an audience, convince them to pay to integrate to a platform that worked in total conflict with all their other internal platforms, and then kind of support them on that journey and manage them through. And so it taught me a lot, and it taught me a lot about consumers, conversion, e-commerce in general, kind of a lot about fashion, which I didn't know a lot about, a lot about tech. I ran the parts and accessories piece for a little while. Yeah. And that's one of the things I really liked about eBay is I got an opportunity to work in different parts of eBay. And every time I worked within a business to bring them onto eBay, whether it be a parts and accessories seller in WA where I'd be sitting on a garage floor on a crate having a cup of tea, or whether it be with someone like the Good Guys, they all had different businesses, different needs, different reasons for using the platform. So I learned a lot about business throughout that time.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, about the people that were there. You said there was a lot of brilliant people, and that's certainly probably the key takeaway I took from my 12 months there was internally in eBay, you know, the opportunity to meet such a diverse group of people, and you're right, they were from different industries and you know, sort of working careers, but also, you know, ethnicity, you know, regions, a lot of different accents, etc. So for me, I remember it was great to kind of just tap into that culture and you know, meet people that I hadn't been rolling with in my work circles probably the previous years before that. And then also externally, you know, we both got to work with you know, big and small retailers externally, which for me has also helped grow my network, etc. So this it's a little bit of what you know, who you know, I suppose, coming into that, but also, you know, talk about taking advantage of the opportunity, because I imagine you've kept such a great network of those people at eBay and external too.
I was really fortunate in that I was in that client-facing role at eBay during that time of growth. I did get to meet a vast array of different retailers, whether they be those smaller ones or whether they be the large ones, and I have kept that network up. And you know, one of the things that I learned at eBay is I really enjoyed that role. And so I wanted to learn more about kind of the ecosystem of e-commerce, which is one of the reasons why I moved into payments. And I actually had plans to move into logistics. I can talk to that a bit later, but it got sidetracked by payments again. But one thing I learned as well is how important networking is and keeping the relationships going and finding unique ways to maintain those without detracting from your existing role. Yeah. And so, you know, I've managed to stay in touch with the retail e-commerce community by staying on board. So I'm on the board for Retail Global. I still attend events. You know, I still talk as I'm still an advocate for e-commerce and conversion and, you know, where payments fit into that. Maybe they don't all the time, but it's something that I'm really passionate about and I won't step back from. I'm also an advisor on a board for a tech startup called Browse. It's in retail tech. And so there are other ways as you develop your career to kind of stay in touch and keep those relationships going. You know, one, because it's your passion and you enjoy it, which is why I do it. But also you never know when you're going to want to kind of move back into another industry or revisit someone, do that who you know, not what you know thing.
Yeah, and the learning too. I've found, you know, some people I've kept a connection with haven't necessarily been, you know, suited me for a role that they've kept or vice versa, but I've caught up with them again and they've just untapped you know, something really interesting or something I didn't know, or they're working on something now that I don't know a lot about, so I've been able to immediately just go, can you tell me more about it, because I'm interested in knowing that.
Sometimes in those fast-growing organisations, whether they be Australian or international, you'll often find that you're either an individual contributor or you're in a small team, you may be a leader, where it's difficult to have people to bounce things off. Like if you're unsure about something, whether it be a career change or whatever, and you, it's not like you can go to your manager or your peer and kind of have these conversations about you. So one thing that I've learned through my networking and maintaining those relationships and also making sure that I join other mentor groups and things is that it's given me a platform to be able to sit down and talk to people about my career and my journey and not feel so kind of lonely in my roles. And so that's something, in hindsight now, I think I've been very fortunate to maintain and to keep going. There's a group now that I'm part of called 2020 Exchange, and there are different groups at all different levels of your career. And this is one where I meet with, you know, 10 to 12 other leaders once a month. We're in the same consortium for a year. You get to know each other very intimately. And you share information, your burning ambitions, what you're working towards, and you've literally got the opportunity to bounce it off other people who can help you zoom out and give you a really different perspective.
Yep.
And I think at every level of your career, that's really important. And if you can find that in relationships you've built through previous jobs or through clients and things and other relationships you've made, I think that's really worthwhile.
And there definitely seems to be a wider space of opportunity for that as well. Like, you know, throwback 20 years, it seemed like the only people that were at board roles are the people that had been in business for 50 years, et cetera. Yep. Sort of that stigma you see in movies.
But old white guys.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. How are you open for that opportunity? How do you take advantage of that? For someone that's, you know, literally a couple of years into their career or beyond, how do you get those opportunities and how do you grab them?
Yeah, I think one of them is to become... Even if you're not in a startup, for example, there are a lot of networking groups associated with startups. And obviously with universities and things as well, there's groups like that. But just get involved in things and go out to things. Something will click for you. You'll be learning the whole time anyway. You'll meet people regardless. But something will click. Like, go to some industry events, especially if you... I mean, it's unlikely that anyone kind of knows where they're going to be in 10 to 15 years' time. It's hard to know what industry you're going to want to work in. It might be that the industries evolve over time. I mean, the jobs that I've done for the last 8 years weren't even thought of when I was at uni. And so I think just getting yourself out there and getting into groups, if you've got a skill set, say it is marketing, say it's finance, whatever it may be, offer your services to someone. who's growing as a startup. So when I joined Browse as an advisor, it was to offer them support through my e-commerce network and my experience in running a business. And I did that unpaid. I did that because I wanted to understand what it takes to take a startup through to raising capital, through to profitability. And no one's going to give you that experience. You have to go and volunteer and you have to ask for it.
Chase, it comes back to, showing some enthusiasm and some initiative. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
And what about your, this is one thing I really wanted to ask you about, because you, the first time we met, you actually sat in on one of the interviews I had. Seems like I had a dozen interviews to get into eBay. But one thing that I really appreciated, that you probably don't even remember, but I knew from the word go you were very, honest, direct, that transparent kind of thing was there. You were sort of you didn't shoot the shit, I remember. And I found it interesting because I was going for a marketing kind of a retail partnerships role there. So I knew I'd have, to work with people beyond just the marketing and brand team where I'd, previously, spent the most time in my career. And it was interesting for me from the word go, just to get in there and hear about sales and, to that point you heard, I said earlier around, oh, what degree did you do? Okay, just listen to us because we know what we're doing over here.
Exactly.
How important has that transparency and honesty been, not only for you, but just in the people you've worked with and people you've hired, et cetera, throughout your career?
Yeah, that's a really good point. That vulnerability and authenticity is something that I pride myself on as a people leader, but it's not for everybody. And you need to understand who you are and what values you have, and then look for organizations. When you're interviewing for a role, you're interviewing them as well.
Yeah.
And so you need to make sure that their values sit with your values. And, when someone puts their mission statement and their culture down on paper, you'll know if it's legitimate or not when you're meeting people and getting to know them in an organisation. And that level of vulnerability and authenticity hasn't always been what organisations have wanted from me. And I've had leaders who have said, that emotional intelligence will only get you so far.
Wow.
It's IQ, not EQ. And, I've had those kinds of conversations. But for me, it's really important. I think, in the business I'm in now, it's a great example. I live in Sydney and I commute to Melbourne every week. My team are down here. We travel constantly. We look after Australia and New Zealand. And so, we're not living in each other's pockets. And we have to have an open and honest and vulnerable and authentic relationship to be able to call people out.
Yeah.
And to be able to have the hard conversations and to be able to support each other and pick up on each other's weaknesses and things like that. So, I have, I would be lying if I didn't say I hadn't left an organisation because it no longer aligned with my values.
Yep.
That happens. Organisations change over time as well. And I think one thing that's worked well for me is that I have stayed true to my values and my brand. And, I've had to make changes when they didn't align anymore. And I've had to have faith that I would end up in the right places because I held true to that, and that's worked for me.
Yeah. And what have you had to learn? What are you still learning? No one's perfect. Mm. There's dozens of leadership traits. I've heard 24 is one I heard recently is the spot on number, but there's dozens of things that
24 traits.
24. Yeah, 24.
Wow.
I heard it was very specific.
It's
but
way more than I've got.
Yeah. So what do you recognize that you're not great at, and that you're learning and are still learning?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm hoping to learn in the role that I'm currently in is more around kind of global strategy and global go to market. So I've always had visibility and exposure to that, but Australia and New Zealand are really important markets for GoCardless, and so and I've got a lot of autonomy and responsibility in how I expand and grow those markets. And there's some complexity in how we're going to market. There are different parts of the markets and segments that we're going after, so it's a huge opportunity for me to hone in on getting more strategic about how I play things out. In the past, I think because of that agility and pace and passion, I can be very quick to make decisions, and they can sometimes be emotive or on gut. And so I've learned over the years to put a lot more data behind it and to take the time to actually think things through, bounce off people where I need to. When I was younger, I used to think I won't trouble my manager or trouble that person by bouncing this idea. I'll just go do some more research or I'll just follow my gut. But there's nothing wrong and everything right about calling, you know, the founder of your business or your manager and saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Am I right? Like, can you just check me? And, you know, we have, I do this thing. I don't even know if the team are going to listen to this. I don't even know if they pick up when I do this. But I sing, like, check yourself before you wreck yourself. Anyway.
And they didn't notice
that. Didn't
expect
any
rapping. I'm sure they noticed that.
which just, it's just a constant reminder for me and for them. Like, it's okay to take a seat back and go, hang on a minute. Am I actually thinking, have I missed anything? Am I thinking this all through? And so for me, one of the skills I need to develop as a leader is more around that strategic piece and being able to zoom out and actually take the time to think, okay, if I execute this way, what does it actually look like in 18 months rather than making those quick kind of fire decisions?
Yeah. Wow. How do you learn to understand or to appreciate or acknowledge what you need to learn? How have you come past that?
There's a couple of ways. One is by making mistakes.
Yeah. Okay. So it comes up and someone said, don't do that again.
Why Or why are you doing that?
Yeah.
So I think it's good to work in organisations. And again, this is something I look for where, you know, you are allowed to make the odd mistake as long as it's in the, you know, the faith of learning and the right intention. But also it's asking. Mm-hmm. So I ask for feedback. I ask for feedback off my managers. Obviously, I ask for it off my peers. I ask for it off my team. I'm constantly asking, you know, what I could be doing better or how I could be moving things forward. I think it's also networking. So I try to meet people who are in similar roles to me, working in organisations that are at similar growth. What are they doing that I'm not doing? What am I doing that I can share with them? I have mentors, obviously, that I catch up with. And I also believe a lot in reverse mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly when you get into more kind of back of house roles where you're not so client facing or you're in leadership roles, you can sometimes lose touch with the end customer.
Yeah.
And I like reverse mentoring with people that are, you know, still doing those sales roles like I used to do or still doing those customer service roles so that I can learn. I think the other thing is, regardless of where you get to in your career, is making sure that you do still go out and meet those customers. You still are selling yourself. I'm always selling. You know, one thing I'm doing at the moment so that I can understand the business better is, if anyone ever contacts us to close an account, I personally call them to ask why. Because I want to know why.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I want to know what we could improve and do better. And I think, and it's also something that I really enjoy, and it helps me stay connected to the product and stay passionate. And as I'm making these decisions around investment and product and go to market, I'm keeping in mind why I'm doing it.
Must be showing that you care as well to the even your own team.
Yeah, yeah. I don't tell the customer who I am, I am, but yeah. But I think it helps me remember why I come to work, which is why I love it so much, which is that I know I'm working for an organisation like PayPal and like eBay at GoCardless, where we are making something available to people who it wasn't before that can literally change their lives.
Yep.
And that stuff is what I care about.
And that's what's motivating you at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's happening. And do you take your work home and look at, you know, friends and family that have certain businesses and kind of just drive into, hey, this is what you should do, or this is what I've seen coming? And
I try not to. Yeah. It's really funny. My husband has his own business, and he, like, as you know, I'm on a lot of boards and do a lot of advisory work, particularly around startup. And he came to me about 2 months ago and goes, do you know anyone I can talk to about how to structure this side business that he's got in addition to his other business? He goes, do you got anyone I could talk to about how to, like, structure it? And I just went, and I thought, do I, don't I? And I went, I'll connect you with someone.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Safe spent sometimes.
Yeah. That, you know, that everyone in my family and my friends know that I'm passionate about my job. I think a lot of them understand what I do and why I do it. I love hearing my kids try and articulate what I do, but they understand that I do it because I care and that I'm passionate. But, yeah, I try not to give too much personal advice to my husband.
Safest bit sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the being a mother really quickly, not into that detail, but you know, challenges come in all shapes and sizes, and happy and bad ones, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, you know, being in, you know, in your career. Mm-hmm. I believe you're at eBay at the time you had both kids.
Second child. First, my daughter Holiday was born when I was at Vodafone.
Okay,
I was actually, I fell pregnant when John was still alive, and we hadn't been acquired by Vodafone yet.
Right.
And this was back when there was no such thing as paid maternity leave.
Yeah.
But John, in the early stages of my pregnancy, committed to giving me maternity leave, which is really lovely.
Wow. Visionary guy, obviously. That's crazy to hear that it didn't exist.
Yeah, it didn't even exist. Yeah. And so that was really lovely. And so I had 3 months with holiday, and then Crazy John's and Vodafone were really great about me kind of working from home and all that kind of stuff. And then I moved to eBay and I had Jimmy. So there's about 5.5 years between them. And I took a little bit longer with him. I took 6 months with him because I thought, you know, he could be my last one. I was getting a bit older and I wanted to really enjoy that time. Felt like I was a bit more established in my career. And the time out is hard. When I was in the individual contributor role at Vodafone and took time out, it's not as hard. All you're really handing over is some opportunities and some cash, and then you've got to come back in and build a pipeline. But when you're working in leadership, it is a much harder thing to step away from. So, you know, at eBay as well, not long after I had Jimmy, I was ill. I got cancer. And I had another longer extended period of time off, longer than I had for either of my children.
Right.
But, you know, I had to find someone to replace me, work with them, you know, keep in the loop. And in both cases with my son and with cancer, when I went back to eBay, the company had changed a lot because it was so fast changing. That, you know, other opportunities had opened up. And again, it came down to that agility and wanting to learn and grow and put my hand up for something completely different and try something new.
Yeah. And that, you know, you're going to talk from the heart with both of those, you know, obviously having that second child, having, you know, an illness to overcome.
Yeah.
You know, you almost want it to be the last thing on your mind is worrying about work and the ever-changing pace of work and, you know, doubting yourself, am I going to be able to keep up? Am I going to still have my role? All that kind of stuff that I imagine is probably going through your head.
Yeah.
What confidence can you give any listener that, because again, challenges come in all shapes and sizes. What confidence can you install in someone that is listening to this that, there are opportunities galore, whether it's exactly the same or more?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in two minds about this one. There will be other opportunities. And if that's the right opportunity for you and it's the right role and the organisation that you're with understands that and cares about you and sees the value in you, they're going to keep you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be fine. But I completely understand the fear. One of the things that I'm trying to change in my organisation and I talk about a lot, and it's not that my organisation are not doing this, by the way, but it's just like it's not done generally,
yep.
is I hate that the way we're set up around maternity leave means that the onus is usually on the female to take that initial time out. And we're making it the discussion of the individuals at home without giving them enough support. We're making it a discussion between that couple, but we've heavily weighted on the dynamic and we're not doing enough to kind of even that out and make it a discussion around who wants to do what and a
yeah.
real choice. As opposed to, well, if you do it, there's all these benefits. And then if I do it, there's only these benefits. And it's harder if I do it and, you
yeah.
know, all that kind of stuff. And so I would love to see us get to a point where we're supporting young men as much as we're supporting young women
mm-hmm.
With paternity and maternity leave so that we're taking that really hard decision-making process off them
yeah.
and we're making it easier for women to come back to work. I also think that flexibility, like I love that we now have flexible options where people can come back to work 3 and 4 days a week and earn prorated money. But that was never my idea of flexibility.
Right.
I always wanted to be in the office. My idea of flexibility is get me a cleaner, help me with childcare,
mm-hmm.
help me with food, get me an Uber in the morning so I can work on my way to work. I want to be there for the
yep.
10, 12-hour day.
Empower me.
Empower me to
yep.
be there and empower me so that when I'm home, I'm with my children and I'm there, I'm present. I'm not having to clean and catch up on the week and do all this stuff. If
yep.
Don't give me a 3 or 4 day week. Empower me to be there.
Yep.
That's my idea of flexibility and I don't think we do enough of that either. And so one thing I learned, and John was a good example of this, is to try and push the boundaries if you can and have those conversations with your employees and with your managers around what flexibility looks like to you. And it's something that we try to do here as well. It's different for everybody. It may not be children, you know, that is your reason for needing flexibility, but being able to articulate that and show your worth outside of that. And for those of you that become leaders, actually knowing what flexibility means to each of the individuals in your team and having the ability to drive that.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. And, you know, I think it's such a timely thing. It's crazy it's taking this long to get there, and I'm sure it's improving step by step. And as you said, you know, flashback 15 years, it sort of didn't even exist to some degree, but a long way to go for sure. And hopefully, I think the growth of fintech as a industry is helping to kind of enable little wins here and there with some of that flexibility. And you know, talk to me really quickly about jumping ship at eBay, leaving that brand, going to Braintree. It's again another company that's had such a buzz in the industry that we work. Sort of couldn't do any wrong going there a little bit. Talk about that role.
The timing was perfect. Again, I was really fortunate. But again, who you know, not what you know. Someone had, so PayPal and eBay had separated. Someone in PayPal who I'd worked with had moved into a leadership role in Singapore, and there was literally a vacancy to lead Australia for Braintree, and so I applied for that role. Again, I knew nothing about payments at all. I understood conversion and user experience, and that people had to pay for things, but that was about it. But I knew how to sell. I knew how to drive sales teams. I knew how to build business. And so this was giving me that, but also giving me the opportunity to learn about payments and to learn about a little bit more about the Australian landscape. Even though Braintree was part of PayPal and both those companies were international companies, in an industry like payments, there's a lot of heavy dependencies on local sponsor banks and different kind of local processing relationships. And it's something that I really wanted to understand and learn about. I didn't think about much until I got in the role about how the Australian landscape's changing with, you know, open banking and things like that, because I knew nothing about payments. But again, it was really good timing. And the landscape is changing so significantly. And it's a really good time to be here. Braintree was fun. So I went from eBay running sales teams and, you know, one very small kind of very focused business unit to running a team of sales and marketing and technical support and account management. And so it was giving me a lot broader experience and a little bit more of that go-to-market, but for an organization who was quite well established. They had been acquired by PayPal. So when I joined, they were sitting in WeWork down the city. Part of my role throughout that time was to migrate them into the PayPal office and to more assimilate them more into that part of the business. And more recently now, they've completely kind of assimilated in. And that came with its own challenges, but also its own learning opportunities and growth. Understanding how businesses behave post-acquisition, understanding how two very different cultures come together, understanding how a company with really large penetration and market share absorbs a smaller one who's on, you know, really fast growth and everything's greenfields, you know, even consolidating operational systems and Salesforce and things like that. Everything was a learning process for me. And I actually found I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot the hard way. I saw a lot of good and bad behavior through a company going through a transition like that. But I know now a lot about what to do and what not to do in those situations. So, you know, ideally I'd love for one more time in my career to be part of an organization prior to an acquisition. And actually be part of that change and help driving that change.
Do you think that is the change happening quicker these days?
So much quicker. Yeah. And I think particularly in fintech, you know, with open banking, there'll be so many new organisations opening up. You see them popping up now because they're kind of getting ready for it. And they're all filling little niches and solving little issues in the banking sector. And there'll be a lot of consolidation post that. And not just domestically, I think globally as well. And I think acquisitions in general and mergers happen so much faster. The expectations are so much higher than they used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago. When there was an acquisition, everyone would go, oh, the ink's dry. And then you'd sit in your same office for 12 months and they'd talk about when they were going to do it and how they were going to do it. And then they'd, you know, announce all the changes first and then slowly migrate. And now it's like, oh, we announced yesterday we've been acquired by such and such and we're moving offices next week, you know. So that breeds a lot of opportunity for leaders around kind of culture change and transition. And again, for people working, it's around agility. But yeah, it's definitely happening way faster than it ever has before.
Okay, perfect. Look, I know we need to wrap this up pretty soon. One thing I do every episode is ask a question from a student. So from the University of Wollongong, Kate And I think this will be an interesting one for you. The question is, as a future leader, I know that the opportunities will be there for me. How do I become a leader when I'm just starting my career?
Oh, I love that question. I love the what the start of it, as a future leader.
Yeah.
Well, she's halfway there. As a future leader. I think that everybody, regardless of their role that they're in, can be a leader. You know, when you're working with people, even if they're in the same role sitting next to you at the desk, whether or not they're a leader or not. Leadership isn't just about the title and, you know, having direct reports and those types of things. It's around their personal brand, how they engage with others, how they collaborate, how they move things forward, going over and above beyond their role, putting their hand up for extra work, trying to be part of other projects, joining groups like I mentioned to try and grow, and just always asking why and being curious and accumulating knowledge. And I think if I could go back in time and try to harness what I think got me successful today, I think it would be that I always wanted to be in the room. I always wanted to know why, understand why things worked the way they did, challenge and kind of keep growing forward. And then I was very conscious of my personal brand.
Yep.
What do I want people to think and remember when they meet me? And I really love that that's what you remembered from your meeting with me, because that authenticity and vulnerability are two of my words.
Yeah.
And so I have three words. But I you know, that's really important to me, is that people get that from me with every engagement that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And leaders are consistent. They're consistent with their values. They're consistent with how they present themselves, and they're, you know, consistently trying to drive themselves forward, and they mentor others and bring them along that journey, whether they're managing them or not. And that's how I spot a leader.
Yeah. And you can start that in any role. You don't even have to have a team, right?
You can start that at
uni.
Yeah.
What was the third word as well? You said you had three words?
Loyalty.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. I know Go Cardless is in very safe hands. You know, you've been with the business about a year now. It's super exciting to see what the business is going to do and what evidently you're going to do in this role.
Uh-huh.
And then beyond that, the next couple of years are going to be just as exciting, I think, for you as well. So I really appreciate you being on the podcast. Hoping you've helped enable an understanding of how to be dream job ready, because you've had some great jobs and some great roles. And, you know, good luck for the rest of this year.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.